Uploading. Tsunami Black Hole Megamix 2K3, now.
The fate of the whole world is in my hands.
You foolish man. I am Ajito Ryo Master. Allow me to reunite you with your ancestors.
Tsunami Generation, and welcome to another episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I'm, of course, your primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis, and of course, it's draft day today, so I'm very excited. When I say draft day, I mean as an NFL draft, because the American football is pretty much the only sport in the world where they get you excited for, hey, this kid that could be a complete bust, we're spending $1 million on him. Let's make an exciting 2-hour show about it. But that's besides the point. But again, I welcome you to another fabulous episode as, you know, we finish up Superhero Month here on Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. Yes, it's just been a glorious month as far as I'm concerned. Many wonderful movies. For that matter, again, because they're mostly DC Bruce Timm movies, of course, they've been absolutely excellent. As of such, on this week, you know, there's been a pattern I've been following throughout the month. You know, I started with a Batman movie, then I did a Superman movie, then I did a Wonder Woman movie. And there was a reason for doing all that, because in this week's movie, we have all three of those characters, the so-called DC Trinity, as one might say, in this movie in Superman Batman Apocalypse, which came out in 2010. There were also other reasons why I sort of went over the movies the way I did. You know, really, for the most part, this was sort of the first major DC direct-to-DVD animated movie that really kind of covered an actual comic book arc, so to speak. You know, not that Superman Doomsday didn't, but, you know, again, with the Batman movie, I did Batman Beyond Return of the Joker, which was, again, it was based off the Batman Beyond series, not based off actual comic books. Superman Doomsday, even though being based off the popular title of the same name, was more, as I said before, more of a sort of the Death and Return of Superman done for the Superman animated series and had more of an animated series feel to it. The Wonder Woman movie, again, it was the origin story, modernized. Yeah, it was taken directly from comic books, but it was very simple to take. This was really the first one that took a sort of modern story and sort of brought it in a animated movie form, excuse me. That being the Supergirl arc that was done in Superman Batman, I want to say issues 8 to 13. It was a 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Sorry, I'm doing math here. which makes me look completely horrible. But, again, a 6-issue arc on the Superman Batman comic in 2004. Written by Jeff Loeb, with art done by the late, great Michael Turner, which, of course, we'll get more into him a little bit. You know, he's one of the co-creators of Witchblade. This is a story I absolutely love. So we're going to get into it, and again, we're going to do synopsis a little different. First, I'm going to give you sort of a pretense into the story before I go over the movie itself. And we're going to get into that right now because we have pretty much no iTunes reviews, no comments on the Facebook page, no nothing. So we're just going to get right into it. Before I go over Cass's synopsis, again, like I said, this is one of my favorite stories. I'll get into sort of my feelings, what it meant to me later. But the lead up to this story in the comics was, Supergirl had been dead for almost 20 years. It was 2004 when they brought him back. She died in 1985 on Crisis on Infinity Earths, which for the few people who've been living on the rock who don't know about that book, in the comic book world, DC in 1985 did a mega event series where they sort of eliminated their multiple Earths to sort of make the continuity simpler. And in it, one of the characters who died was Supergirl. And they kept her dead for 20 years. There had been characters throughout the years, throughout the 90s, mind you, who had the name Supergirl, but they weren't Supergirl as in Kara Zor-El from Krypton, Clark's cousin. There was the Matrix Supergirl, which came from a pocket universe that General Zod had terrorized and killed a bunch of people who could shapeshift and that stuff and took the form of Supergirl. And, of course, there was Linda Danners in a Supergirl miniseries in the late 90s written by Peter David, which is absolutely superb, that took on the moniker of Supergirl and sort of had powers but eventually lost them. So in 2004, DC decided, let's finally bring back the real Kara Zor-El Supergirl, and they gave it into the hands of Jeff Loeb with artist Michael Turner in the Superman-Batman comics. And this is the story that basically inspires this movie. And I mean, that's sort of the pretense history behind it. So, on to cast and synopsis. Starring Kevin Conroy as Batman, Tim Daly as Superman / Clark Kent, Summer Gao as Kara Zor-El / Supergirl, Susan Eisenberg as Princess Diana / Diana Prince / Wonder Woman, Julianne Grossman as Big Barda, Andre Braugher as Darkseid, Ed Asner as Granny Goodness. Yes, Ed Asner is playing a woman for those who've, again, been living under a rock and didn't watch the Superman animated series or Justice League, or Justice League United, or Unlimited, excuse me. But moving on, Rachel Quaitens playing Housebringer and Layla, or excuse me, Housebringer / Layla, and Artemis, though her Artemis is uncredited in the actual credits, but she also plays Artemis. Synopsis, it's been a week since the events of the giant kryptonite meteor being destroyed by Batman and Superman and the apprehension of President Luthor from the events of issues 1 through 7 of Superman Batman comic, and in our case, the Superman Batman Public Enemies movie. Since then, past couple weeks, there have been kryptonite meteors burning up in Earth. One big kryptonite meteor falls in Gotham Bay, and while Batman goes to explore it, somebody gets out what seems to be a woman with blonde hair who steals the Batboat and runs rampant through Gotham City. With the help of Superman, they're eventually able to discern that she is Kara Zor-El from Krypton and is Clark's cousin. They keep her in the Fortress of Solitude for a few weeks to learn Earth language and everything, and finally Clark figures it's time to take her out and take her home with him to Metropolis. But through a ruse of showing that she can't control her powers with the help of Wonder Woman, Housebringer, and Batman, along with the fact that it's revealed that Housebringer has been seeing visions of Kara dying, it is decided that they will bring Kara to Themyscira, where Diana, aka Wonder Woman, will train her. After a couple of months of training, Superman is starting to get tired and wants to bring Kara home, though Batman and Wonder Woman are continuing to stand on the idea that they need to be cautious, that they don't know who she is, and that Housebringer's visions are getting more constant, and that they might be coming true soon. While they were discussing this, a boom tube opens up, and an army of doomsday monsters is revealed. Wonder Woman calls her Amazons to help fight alongside Batman and Superman. But after a couple minutes, Batman realizes this is all a ruse. After Superman destroys the Doomsday monsters with his heat vision, Superman and Wonder Woman meet up with Batman to find a dead Layla, who, with the last bit of her power, reveals that Darkseid and his Furies have come and kidnapped Kara, and in the process, Darkseid killed Layla. Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman head to Big Barda's, who is a former member of Darkseid's Royal Guard, who has defected to Earth and is part of the Justice League, to ask for her help to go to Apocalypse. She agrees only on the promise that she will come along to help them. So Big Barda, Wonder Woman, Superman, and Batman head to Apocalypse, where they all have different goals. Batman searches out Darkseid's Hell Spores. Wonder Woman and Big Barda make their way underground to eventually the arena, where they face off with Granny Goodness and her Furies. And Superman makes his way to Darkseid to try to get Kara back. Though it is revealed that Darkseid had twisted Kara's mind, and Superman and Kara proceed to do battle. In the end, however, Batman finds Darkseid's Hell Spores, finds the code, and reprogram them to his codes, and is ready to explode them if Darkseid doesn't agree to swear off harming Kara Zor-El. Wonder Woman and Big Barda are able to defeat the Furies and capture Granny Goodness, and Superman is able to subdue Kara. Of course, because of all of this, Darkseid agrees to swear off ever harming Kara Zor-El ever again. They bring Kara back to Themyscira, where she grieves a bit over the death of Hasbrigger, and Clark finally decides he knows a place where Kara can just be herself, which is something she'd been struggling throughout the entire film. Ma and Pa's home back in Smallville, Kansas, which that's already going to probably start an argument with some fans. But that's here nor there. As they're about to enter Ma and Pa's house, Darkseid punches him through the door to reveal that he has been waiting for them and plans on destroying Superman, as has been a long-awaited thing for him. As Superman and Kara do battle with Darkseid, each get the upper hand on each other. But finally, Superman and Kara finally get the upper hand, knocking Darkseid back into a boom tube that Kara had reprogrammed to send him back into the deep recesses of space rather than back to Apocalypse, where he starts to freeze up and will be that way until somebody finds him. Through this final battle, Kara realizes what she wants to do with her life and that she wants to accept her responsibility of the powers that she has. And as such, she reveals to Batman, Big Barda, Wonder Woman, and the rest of the Amazons that she has decided to take on the name and the costume of Supergirl. Are you ready for the new sensation? Well, here's a shot put round the world. All you bathroom boys salute when a bag of balls. Well, guess who's back in circulation? Now, I don't know what you may have heard, but what I need right now is the original Good Time Girl. Wow, I hit the wrong button there. I have no idea how David Lee Roth, Yankee Girl, just all of a sudden popped up. I must have hit the wrong button, even though this is all completely digital. I think it's time to move on and get on with our review of Superman Batman Apocalypse. Start with our review of Superman Batman Apocalypse, and as we always do, we're going to start with music. And the first thing we're going to talk about is the Superman Batman Apocalypse theme. I love this theme. Again, I talked about how this is a movie about the Trinity, and it is something to talk about that even though this movie's entitled Superman Batman, it really, I think a better name would probably have been Trinity Apocalypse, though that probably doesn't make as much sense. So, yeah, maybe it is a better title to say Superman Batman Apocalypse. But I say that because it is really more about this Trinity. You know, you, not just Superman Batman, it's Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. And all of them have a big role in this story. And the theme of this movie really is this great theme that sort of has takes bits and pieces from sort of the classic idea of what these characters' themes should be. You know, with Superman, you know, sort of the bright brass tones that you get, that you see, like, or should I say you hear in, you know, the John Williams score in the Superman animated series theme. You know, that brass, that, you know, grand, that sort of bright sort of instrumental tones that you hear. With Batman, sort of the dark, sort of bass, sort of violet string tones that you hear. And then, of course, with Wonder Woman's sort of the grandeur, sort of the Greek chords that you hear. All of this is in this theme. I could totally see this theme being a Justice League theme just for those reasons. Because it hits all of those notes perfectly. You know, there's darkness to the theme, there's light to the theme. There's a perfect balance in this theme where you can look at individual parts of it that match each character. And I think it's just a beautiful theme. And I love sort of the opening animation that goes with this, especially the opening theme of the sort of main theme, shall I say, where it has the different symbols. Though my only criticism of it is that I would have liked to see sort of, you know, the actors who were playing the characters next to their symbols, like, you know, the Bat symbol, Kevin Conroy, though, that was there. Superman's symbol should have had Tim Daly. Wonder Woman's symbol should have gotten Susan Eisenberg, you know. But, you know, they also gave Darkseid and Supergirl's top billing here, so. But that's besides the point. That's really nothing that has to do with whether this movie is good or not. That's my own personal taste. So overall, I love this theme. I think it's probably one of the best movie themes done for a DC direct-to-DVD animated movie. Moving on to the overall score, again, it's done, I think, perfectly. Because, again, we've gone with an orchestra to do the entire score that does a wonderful job. All of the themes of the characters just match what their theme should be. You know, again, the Superman theme adds the sort of brass that you want in a Superman theme. The use of strings and sort of the deep bass that you have for Batman is there. And then, sort of, again, those Greek chords that you want for a Wonder Woman theme is there. The music during the fight scenes is done perfectly. You know, Something I don't talk about a lot is sort of the music in the fight scenes. Because a lot of times, you know, they're okay. I mean, very rarely are they done well. You know, one of the few occasions where I've actually talked about it is when I did Gundam Wing. Because the music was so superb and it matched it perfectly. But here's another case of that. In this case, the fight scenes, again, sort of orchestra, so grandeur of the orchestra. And just upbeat and... they really lends itself to influencing the mood of the fight. Not like it's manipulating you, but again, it's adding on to sort of the tension, sort of the drama of the fight, the way great music is supposed to. Great music is supposed to add on to the feelings and the emotions that you feel of a scene, as we've talked about before. And the music here, especially during the fight scenes, does that perfectly. You know, I think of two places where this is done to absolute perfection are the fight, actually three. You have the fight of the Doomsday Monsters, the fight of Wonder Woman and Big Barda against the Furies, and then of course the final fight with Darkseid, with Superman and Kara. The music during these scenes are absolutely incredible. They perfectly add on to the mood of the scene and perfectly match the tones and everything. And it just makes the scene so much greater. Those fight scenes, it just makes them so much greater. And of course, the music and the rest is really, really well done. And I very much enjoy it. I could imagine myself getting this CD. The tones are right. Not that music is always used, but again, I think the apocalypse theme is very well done. And and that's the thing. Nothing feels out of place. Nothing feels forced. You know, again, I talked about how it enhances the mood and enhances the movie, which is a word I was blanking on earlier. But yeah, how the music does a just wonderful job of enhancing this movie. And I think that's the best thing I can say about this score. Again, the music itself is perfectly done. I love big orchestra and sort of this sort of grandeur that it adds onto a movie or a series for that matter. So with that being said, we are going to move on to animation, and we're going to do that after a word from our sponsors.
Hey everyone, my name is Michael Bailey.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we host a podcast called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
Presented by the Superman homepage. On the show... Wait.
What?
This just isn't working out for me. It's not bombastic enough. We need something epic.
Like what?
Welcome to From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, presented by the Superman homepage. I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And I am Michael Bailey.
From Crisis to Crisis chronicles the adventures of Superman.
Wait. I'm just not feeling this.
I'm just wondering how there's a needle scratching sound when all of this is clearly digital.
Look, all we need to say is that this is a trailer for a show called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by the Superman homepage. My name is Michael Bailey.
I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And every week we give in-depth synopsis and reviews for just about every Superman book published between Man of Steel number 1 in 1986.
And Adventures of Superman number 649 in 2006. We also talk about the related Superman media, what was happening in the rest of the world when these comics were published, and what else was going on in the DC Universe.
The show drops every Thursday-ish at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com.
From Crisis to Crisis is also a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
So join Jeffrey and I each week as we explore Superman during the post-crisis era, which includes Exile, Panic in the Sky, Doomsday, The Marriage, and beyond.
And write into the show at FromCrisisToCrisis@gmail.com and hear it read on the air, eventually, because we get behind on that sort of thing.
Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Side effects from Crisis to Crisis include loss of money from buying back issues, a desire to read 20-year-old comic books, nausea, drowsiness, pizza, blurred vision, upset stomach, a desire to kick puppies and kittens, and backache from lifting boxes of Superman comics. If the excitement of From Crisis to Crisis lasts more than 4 hours, seek immediate medical attention.
And we're back, and we're getting right into an animation, and the first thing we're going to talk about is we're going to sort of talk about the overall style of Superman, Batman, Apocalypse, and really compare it to the original artwork of the comic book that it's based off of. Because again, like I said, this is, well, I kind of need to correct myself a bit. It's the kind of first sort of comic book, direct-to-DVD, based off a comic book of the modern era. I mean, they did New Frontier, which was based off a comic book. I'm not saying it wasn't, but that was such a distinct style and unique that it was, and, you know, I didn't even think about it, really, because I was thinking more modern comics, but, you know, so it's not the first, but again, it is lending itself to a distinct style. In this case, it is the art style of Michael Turner, who is an artist who helped create Witchblade. You know, he's done a lot of work for Top Cow. You know, he's worked on titles like Spawn, again, Witchblade, Tomb Raider. He's known vastly for his cover work. He's done covers for JLA. You know, he's done covers for, you know, Flash, The Hulk, X-Men, just to name a few. Of course, and he was brought to DC to do this 6-issue arc of Superman, Batman, which he also did covers for. Unfortunately, he passed away in 2008 due to complications of bone cancer. And I definitely feel he is missed because, again, this was during the time I was just coming into collecting comics and really reading comics around 2007. And I feel when I came into starting collecting, my personal feeling is he was one of the top three artists in the industry today, alongside the likes of Gardner and Mark Bagley. Gardner's whose first name I'm blanking on, and I hate that. But he was one of the artists on Amazing Spider-Man. I think those three were definitely the three best artists at the time. And yeah, I'm saying that over, you know, people like Jim Ballard and Amanda Conner, who I like. And of course, Amanda Conner, who had been doing work at this time, who's really risen, I think, in the past couple years, become the best artist in the industry today. But again, we really aren't here to talk about comic book artists, because this isn't comic book crazy. But so again, yeah, so they were going to match the art style of Michael Turner. I think they did a wonderful job doing it. It feels like Michael Turner artwork. Read numerous comics that has Michael Turner's artwork in it, including Superman, Batman, Supergirl arc, which I think that's the most checked out book I've ever checked out of a library. You know, I would just keep checking out because I just love the story. And of course, we'll get into comic book comparisons later. But as far as the artwork is concerned, yeah, they match the artwork, I think, very, very well. It's not direct, because the only way it could have probably maybe been more direct is if Michael Turner oversaw it himself. But for what they did, I think they matched his artwork pretty damn well. And it really does add to why this movie is good, because Michael Turner's artwork is just so beautiful to look at. You know, it's very streamlined, it's very smooth, it's very slick, and it's artwork that is, I think, perfect for action and movement and all of that. With that, we're going to move on to character designs. And again, this is distinctive because you would think, well, what's there to talk about? It's, you know, Superman's classic design and all that. But again, being that it's based off Michael Turner's artwork, they're matching his artwork. They're also matching his designs of the characters. We're going to start with Batman. And again, I love Michael Turner's Batman. Again, it's slick. It's smooth. You feel like you're face-to-face with a ominous figure when you see his design as Batman. You know, something he has in common with Jim Ballant, besides drawing beautiful women, is, you know, they do a wonderful job of having the cape being encompassing Batman and sort of this very ominous figure, especially when the cape is all the way around Batman. Something Jim Baelin does very well as well. And so I just love that look through the majority of the film. But again, he does a wonderful job showing off, you know, Batman's physique and how he's able to use it in battle. Or seeing he, like Michael Turner again, was alive. But I mean, the artist, they did a wonderful job doing design-wise Batman's design as Michael Turner did it. It had sort of the slickness that the design had, and it was very wonderful to look at. Superman and Clark Kent, again, I love this design much more than I loved design in Doomsday, you know. And again, I love Bruce Timm's designs, but again, in Doomsday, there's just some things off with it. It just seemed wrong. It just seemed too many lines there. Again, just enough lines, again, gives us sort of the broad, sort of classic, sort of Superman. I want to say the ideal, or at least the idea of sort of the classic American male physique within Superman. Again, not what a male physique should look like, but again, what sort of the classic American male physique is thought of, you know, in general. You know, he doesn't use too many lights in the face. He gives it sort of a smooth look. And yet, at the same time, it's chiseled. And, you know, again, the broad shoulders. And he looks like Superman. And I like that very, very much. And more importantly, there are times he looks like just a complete badass. Which, again, goes back to the artwork. Does a wonderful job of doing that. Moving on to Kara Zor-El / Supergirl. The design is just a wonderful design of the character, bringing the character into the modern age. Because again, you know, the Supergirl of the past, you know, Supergirl's always, her design has always been a character of the times. When she was introduced in sort of the, I want to say 50s and 60s, you know, she was sort of, you know, let's say she was designed the way, you know, women were thought to have been in the time, sort of the Girl Scout, sort of secretary-esque type of character. You know, in the 70s, she came bit of a hipster, 80s, sort of an 80s child. In the 90s, especially Linda Danner, she was very 90s. And so here, her design is really based around sort of the idea of the typical American teenage girl. Though they did tone it down a bit in the actual comic, as far as when she was in Metropolis, and of course she had sort of the, I don't want to call those booty jeans, but sort of the hip-hugging jeans and everything. In the actual comic, she had a thong on. And I say that because they show the thong straps. Or at least I think that's a thong. I could be wrong. I'm sure people will have no problem absolutely correcting me and calling me a pervert. But, you know, that is what was in the actual comic. And so they didn't show the thong straps in the movie. That wasn't there. It was sort of hip-hugging jeans and sort of the short shirt. Which, you know, let's be honest, that is thought of typically as sort of a American teenage girl's clothing design. But again, in all sort of the clothing that she wears, wonderful. I love, again, the sort of smooth feminine design that they give her. I think it matches her character well. You know, when I look at Kara, you know, my first thought is, wow, this, again, it is the typical American teenage girl. As in, when I say teenage, I mean as in the typical 17, 18-year-old girl. Though I think she's technically 16 here. But, you know, we're not gonna get into that. But yeah, I just love the designs. They put the curves in all the right places. There's just a perfect balance of feminism and femininity, along with sensuality within her character design that, you know, again, Michael Turner does these wonderful, especially when he's drawing women, just, you know, he just had a knack for having the perfect balance of sensuality combined with sort of inner strength and everything within his female characters that I just absolutely loved. And speaking of that, moving on to Wonder Woman / Princess Diana, again, just that perfect balance of femininity along with sort of just that strong build that Wonder Woman has, you know. Again, smooth, slick design, you know. Like I said, it's that perfect balance. When I think of Wonder Woman, this is the design I think of. As crazy as it sounds, you know, again, clothing and sort of the perfect amount of cleavage, which, you know, it may seem funny that I'm talking about this, But again, there is a balance there that needs to be maintained. You know, especially when we're talking about American comic characters, whether it be Wonder Woman, you know, characters like Black Cat, Emma Frost, and, you know, a lot of characters that have a great amount of sensuality as part of their character design. There's a certain balance that each character has that you need to have. You go too conservative and people have a hard time believing in these characters' motives. You go too far the other way, go too slutty, again, people have a hard time and they don't like the character. There is a certain balance to the design as far as the sexuality and sensuality within the character design that these characters need to have. And again, it's accomplished perfectly here. And that's what I love. They do it perfect. It's the right amount. You know, these characters feel sexual and sensual and absolutely looked gorgeous. And yet, it's not too far over the line where it's, hey, look at my boobies! It's wonderful and it's perfect and I love it. I love when you have perfect balance. Again, Big Barda, you see that balance. And again, a lot of that also has to do with the fact that you have, you know, the scene to where she starts off in a towel and then eventually goes into her costume. And you sort of see her change into it through shadow. But still, it is a matter, wonderful job, beautiful design. It's that type of design that can make you want to learn more about a character and read more about her. So I absolutely love her design. Again, not only does it make me think, God, she's a gorgeous woman, and this is the same for Wonder Woman as well. The way they build and the way they have her move in the movie, along with Kara, has me completely believing in the way that, yeah, these girls can kick ass. It's not the thing to where they went too far the other way, you know, opposite of conservative, and made them too, I'm going to say the word, too slutty and too supermodel-y, to where, you know, when they're fighting, I couldn't believe that they're kicking ass. You know, if they made them too fan servicey and too much of that, it would be a point to where I would have a hard time believing in them being able to fight the way they do. But again, their designs, it perfectly accentuates their sensuality, their sexuality, and at the same time allows me to believe in the fact that they're able to pull off the maneuvers that they're pulling off in these fights. You know, things like Hurricane Ranas and that wonderful sort of combo that Wonder Woman does at the end of the fight where she lands on the back of Guillotina, rolls off and on the ground throws a kick that takes down Granny Goodness. It's in the design that allows me to believe that that is real, and that just helps the movie, enhances the movie so much. Darkseid, again, just a wonderful, wonderful villain design. I've always liked Darkseid's design because it's always been a sort of an ominous evil within its design. And again, it is the classic Darkseid design here. I very, very much like it. I completely believe in that this is a force to be reckoned with. And again, it goes more into the acting, and we'll get into that later. You know, sort of his technical prowess. But as far as design, yeah, I can believe in this being just a character that is a force for Superman to deal with. Moving on to Granny Goodness and the Furries. Really good job on designs. I like the color schemes within their designs. Again, perfectly matched the book. Again, with the Furries, the whole sensuality with inner strength, because I can't think of the other word because apparently I'm having a problem thinking of words today. But that's besides the point. But again, you know, you can believe in that these characters are dangerous. And then Granny Goodness, that sort of obese look of her that, you know, just creepy, you know, combined with Ed Asner's voice as well, just makes her just feel like a real villain. And then last but not least, Lila, Artemis, and the Amazons. Again, I'm okay with their designs. I'm not, their designs I'm not too excited about, or which is probably the wrong way to say it, but too high on, you know, because they're basically sort of slick one pieces, and With Artemis, I can see that working, being sort of the warrior that she is. And I guess the same with Layla. I don't really have a problem with that they don't work, but it's just, it just seems that there may be a bit of dynamic missing from their character design. Though I will say this, I love sort of the armor on the Amazons, and it's, I know a lot of people probably know what an AMV is, or sort of a movie, sort of music video, where you basically put audio from a song, or for this matter, a trailer to a piece of video. I can completely see somebody combining scenes from this movie with the audio from 300, and it would look awesome, I think. But with that, we're going to move on to special effects, and the special effects, I just feel, are done wonderful. You know, and again, we're talking here about rubble and sort of things crumbling and dust and shadow and all that. It is just done perfectly. It enhances the movie the way it's supposed to. It never stands out, yet it's there and it's obvious and enhances. And really, especially during the fight scenes, it helps enhance sort of the brutality and sort of the feeling of these fights. And I absolutely love that about the special effects. They're just done to a wonderful extent. And then, of course, you have the backgrounds. And again, backgrounds are gorgeous. Gotham City feels like this sort of suffocating metropolis. Speaking of metropolis, just this bright, open city, especially in that park scene. Themyscira just feels like a paradise. Darkseid, Wonder Woman makes the comment in the movie that it smells like death. You know, looking at Apocalypse, it looks like death. The backgrounds are beautiful. They stand out on their own. And for that matter, they really do help enhance sort of the scenery and the location and sort of the feel of the mood in each scene of the movie the way a background should. And I absolutely love it. With that, we're going to move on to acting. And first with acting, we're going to start with protagonist acting. And I think that all of the protagonists did a wonderful job. Kevin Conroy, as always, pulls off a perfect Batman. You know, and here's something, you know, I'll say about it right now. When people ask me about who's my Batman, who's my Superman, and in the case of Wonder Woman, who's my Wonder Woman, I'm always going to say Kevin Conroy, Tim Daly, and Susan Eisenberg. Because their voices and the way they portray these characters are just the perfect way I envision these characters being portrayed. You know, a lot of people always want to portray Batman as sort of this dark, brooding, sort of emo type of character. But there's a lot of comedy and a lot of sort of humanism within Batman that Kevin Conroy is always able to bring out. You know, there are a lot of one-liners that Batman says that are just, I love in this movie. My favorite being, you know, Big Barter saying, you know, if you don't like it, get over it. Him saying, well, I'm over it. How about you? Just like that. And perfect timing, perfect delivery. He does a wonderful job. Again, making me believe in this Batman character who is, you know, he'll do what's necessary. You know, as we see with him programming the Hellspawns to go off if Darkseid doesn't give in to his demands. Kevin Conroy makes me believe in that character. Tim Daly does a wonderful job portraying Superman who's just caught up in a mixture of emotions. Because again, as we'll talk about more when we go into story, you know, you have a Superman that's dealing with finally having somebody else from the planet Krypton to be around. You know, a last survivor of Krypton. And more importantly, a member possibly of his family. And sort of going to give benefit of doubt. And just sort of a mixture of emotions within Clark. Tim does a wonderful job of portraying it. And more importantly, he does a wonderful job of portraying this Superman that, you know, when he wants to be, is not necessarily a Boy Scout. Again, you want to see why, you know, the idea that, oh, Superman's a Boy Scout and your grandpa is a superhero, it is an idea that is completely unfactual and completely wrong. Watch this movie. Because this, I think this is really a great example of this, who Superman is. he can be a badass. In fact, he is a badass, especially when he wants to be and everything. But he's just the person who always makes that right decision, no matter what it comes to, you know. He will always make that right decision. But it's also because of that, and same with Wonder Woman, which is why that if he had tried the bluff that Batman did with Darkseid, it wouldn't work. Again, a lot of that comes from the performances of Tim Daly and Kevin Conroy. They're just absolutely superior. Susan Eisenberg, again, last week I was talking about the difference between their portrayals. And here, sir, you have a perfect balance to the way that Susan Eisenberg portrays Wonder Woman here. This is what I envisioned Wonder Woman, again, portrayals. Militant and yet hopeful. Believing in herself, her inner strength, relying on herself, but yet, again, it's not, oh, every 20 seconds, how horrible men are. Right there, she understands the weaknesses and strengths of everybody is according to one's own individual basis, rather than what their gender is, what their race is, and everything. You know, she's embracing of the human world, yet at the same time understanding of its evils. And that's the way Susan Eisenberg plays Diana, and she just portrays her perfectly. Again, I kind of see her as sort of the mother figure in this movie, sort of, you know, whether it be sort of splitting up the bickering children of Bruce and Clark, and at the same time also being a mentor to, you know, Kara. You know, as Big Barda says, she's a symbol for her and inspires her. You know, she's very much of a mother figure in this movie, which I very, very much like. Summer Glau does a wonderful job portraying Kara. You know, yeah, just made me believe in this sort of teenage girl who's trying to find herself. At the same point in time, she's probably the only one who's... I had a particular issue with her acting, and it's very similar to a problem I had last week with Wonder Woman, with a certain amount of their characters. And again, there is a scene or two where Summer Glau is a bit too subdued in her acting for my taste. One of those scenes is there's a scene to where, you know, they're back from Apocalypse and Kara's just woken up and she realizes, oh my god, Layla's been killed. Because Layla, and then starts crying. I would have liked to see a lot more emotion there. She's a bit too subdued in that scene. And there's a couple of scenes like that where, again, more emotion is better in that case. Yeah, you can worry about doing too much emotion, but I'd rather have them show me too much emotion than not enough. Because I think it's more capable to take an audience out of a movie if you're not showing enough emotion rather than showing too much emotion. But other than that, she did a wonderful job portraying this teenage girl who's in this new place. Moving on to the antagonist acting, which is really just Granny Goodness and Darkseid. Andre Bargar, you know, who is an actor a lot of people probably would remember more on... I can't remember the name of the show, but it's the show on TNT with... what's his name? Raymond. Raymond Ramon, if I remember his name right. And some other actor. I'm blanking on their names. But it's that show about sort of middle-aged men on TNT. He does a wonderful job portraying Darkseid. You know, there are some people who came out saying, oh, well, he didn't give me a performance because it's so subdued. But the thing is, that is who Darkseid is. Darkseid is subdued. This is a matter, I think, of people just not getting who Darkseid is because they may not be experienced with sort of the fourth world and, you know, the gods of the fourth world that, you know, Jack Kirby created, in this case, Darkseid. That is who Darkseid is. He is subdued because he's a tactician. He's maniacal. Yeah, he can be a brute when he needs to, but he is just calculating tactician. You know, very much like Lex Luthor. In fact, probably more than Lex Luthor. Everything he does has a point to it. Where he moves, how he acts, how he punches, where he sends his opponents. There's a tactical advantage that he is trying to accomplish. And sort of the very subdued way Andreas approaches the voice, I think is absolutely excellent. And at the same time, absolutely creepy. But speaking of creepy, granny goodness, classic voice of Ed Asner as, you know, reprising the role that he did in the Superman animated series. And, of course, the Justice League series, he did it, you know, again. Just, wow. Ed Asner does a just wonderful job doing this sort of creepy, masculine, feminine voice. This creeps you out and just wants you to have Wonder Woman just punch Granny in the face just to shut her up. It's just so creepy. Just a wonderful job of portraying the villain. Well, that's it for acting. And we're going to move on to story. And we're going to do that after a word from our sponsors.
Okay, let's get this show on the road, gang.
I'm Batman.
This looks like a job for Superman.
Monthly Mondays, available the third Monday of every month at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.
And welcome back, and moving on to our last part of the review, let's talk about story. So first point we're going to talk about again, film adaptation of the comic book source material, being that this is a, you know, direct sort of adaptation of a comic book story. Overall, they did a wonderful job. There are some things that they took out, and for the most part, most of those things I understood, and yet they also added some things. There are very little things here or there, but for the most part, it follows the story directly. One of the things they took out is, again, being that this is written by Jeff Loeb, for the most part, most of the story is actually told in thought bubbles, and there's sort of this inner dialogue between Bruce and Clark that's going on, where they're sort of talking about the other and how they help each other and all of that, that goes on through the comic book story. Well, obviously, you really can't do that in a movie of, you know, constantly having inner thought. So that was something that was really taken out, and they sort of tried to show through various scenes that sort of friendship, which I thought they did very, very well. They took out some jokes, added some new ones in. Again, I guess that's just for whatever reason doing it. It works for the most part. There are some jokes I would have loved to see back in. Though I do think how they changed sort of the interaction between Bruce and the dog was better in this movie than it was in the comic. One thing that they added was the montage scene of them shopping, which I think perfectly helps you bring you into just who Kara is. And again, we'll talk about that more in the next point, but that's not in the original comic. The way it is in the original comic, they're in Metropolis, she says, I want to learn everything. And really the next scene is them holding bags at a hot dog venue. That being a hot dog and him saying, well, that's everything. Junk food shopping, you're a teenage girl, which that would be true. Well, I don't know about the junk food. I know junk food's a guy thing, but the trouble that could cause, it's ridiculous. But that's besides the point. But for me, the big difference that I can really see is the way the movie ends. And let me explain. They changed up the ending of Darkseid. In the comic, what happened is the Justice League was basically in on it. And so when Darkseid hit Supergirl with his Omega Beams, they did a switcheroo to where they brought Kara up to the Justice League Watchtower and in her place put dust. So it would look like Supergirl had been vaporized, or should I say, it looked like Kara had been vaporized. And of course, this led to Superman getting all mad, beating the hell out of Darkseid, and he takes Darkseid, brings him into space, and basically, with his super speed, brings him to, like, the edge of space and puts him against some sort of space wall that's, like, filled with, like, lost souls and leaves him there. And, of course, it gets revealed that it was a ruse by Batman, of course, Superman, Wonder Woman, to make Darkseid think that, you know, Kara was gone. Of course, they do that differently in the film, to where they have this big fight with Kara and Superman with Darkseid, and they just push him into a boom tube, and of course, the boom tube is set to some place deep in space. I actually like the movie version better, I'll say that. The other thing that they change is, again, because the Justice League was involved, you know, after that, they showed the Justice League help rebuilding the Kent's house as the Kents come back. And that final scene where Kara reveals that she's taking on the role of Supergirl, you know, they have not just the Amazons and Big Barda and Wonder Woman and Batman, but they have various members of the JLU. That scene, I think, works better the way it's done in the comics. Again, just the different teams she's mentioning, you know, again, she mentions how she can't wait to hang out with Power Girl, who's her cousin. You know, she makes mention of Stargirl. Of course, Stargirl says, well, that's me, which is, I just find funny. I just think that scene is done better the way it's done in the comics with the various superheroes. There's a bit of that grandeur of that scene just taken out the way it's done in the movie. And again, I just don't understand why they just can't bring all these superhero characters in. Would it really cost that much? Really? And I'm not just talking animation. I'm talking, is it going to cost them that much just to use the characters? Do they have to pay out so much royalty just to use the characters? That I'm willing to understand I'm wrong on it, but you know, I just think it works better the way it's done in the comic book. But at the same point in time, I do think that the whole fight with Darkseid and the way it ends is done better in the movie. And I think that's a great measure of a movie, is that, well, yeah, there was a couple things here or there that I felt were done better in the comic book, there were a lot of things that the movie did that I thought were better than the actual comic art itself, which, at the end of the day, just leads to the fact that it's a great adaptation of the comic book source material. It really follows it, for the most part, to a T, and while there's some parts that are better in the comics, there are also a lot of parts that are better in the movie than they are in the actual original comic, which I think is wonderful. Moving on to Kara, you know, again, a large part of this story is really about her. And, you know, again, she is this teenage girl who's, for, let's say, 20, 30 years, have been in sort of frozen hibernation, you know, traveling through space and an asteroid, you know, being brought to a new world, having to adapt to a new world, having to learn new languages, having to adjust to a new society, which can really make, again, that comparison of Superman and sort of the Superman characters to sort of an immigration status, which I'm not going to get into because that I'm sure that's a touchy subject, as any real world subject appears to be touchy, but that's besides the point. But again, the sort of the trial she has to go through, at the end of the day, just wanting to be herself, which again, a large part of the movie, that's what it is, her trying to find herself, trying to find out who she is and what she is. Again, that's why I love that montage scene, because it really gives you a view into the fact that, like, at the end of the day, Kara is just a teenage girl. Yeah, because she's from Krypton, and the way the yellow sun works on her Kryptonian, you know, body, she has these superpowers. But at the end of the day, she is just like any other teenage girl. You know, she wants to go see movies with her girlfriend. She wants to go shopping. She wants to eat junk food. I will, by the way, say this. There's so many scenes in that montage that just make me laugh. Of course, the final scene, you have the scene where she's looking at the shoes and she's bent over and the two guys stop to check out her ass. And then Clark gives them that look. It makes me laugh every time. You do not have a soul in your body if you cannot laugh at that. And then, of course, the other part is at the end where she comes out in that very revealing dress, and Clark goes, no. And she goes, perfect, I'll take it. Because that was the measure of it. If he said no, then it was a perfect dress. And it... Is it a bit cheesy? Yeah, but in this case, I think the cheesiness works, and they're good jokes. And they really draw you into just who this character is. You know, she is the typical teenage girl. Yes, as a teenage girl, yes, she's going to do things sometimes that people may not like just to get attention. But that's very typical of, well, for that matter, it's very typical of a teenager. Just not a teenage girl, but a teenager. But again, it just brings you into the idea of that's who she is. She's normal. She's just like anybody else her age. She just happens to have superpowers. And having to find out what having those superpowers mean. You know, again, being a teenager, she was very easily manipulated by Darkseid. And then left wondering if that was because of a dark part that was already in her. Or if it was just Darkseid. And again, her fight with Darkseid helped her realize what the answer to that question was. And I like that. I love that they set that up. That before the fight, she's asking, my mind was taken over by Darkseid. Was it because he took over my mind? Or was it because of a darkness deep within myself that's just truly who I am? And then after that Darkseid fight, it helps her realize, no, the darkness is not who she is. She makes a choice of who she is. Because, again, that great line like where Darkseid says, you could have been great as part of my honor guard. It would have been a wonderful life. Yeah, but it's better to be choosing my own life, or, you know, something along those lines. Which, again, her realization, again, it's not about the powers or anything. It's about her choosing and her living the life she wants to live. That helped her realize she does want to use her powers for good. She does want to, you know, live up to the sort of the symbol that her cousin lives up to. And helps her ascend to the mantle of Supergirl. And that's just done to such wonderful... Again, the story does a wonderful job of training it. Again, another one of the great scenes that helps this is when they're walking in the park right before Wonder Woman and Hausbringer sort of jump them. And they're looking at the Superman statue that's been erected for Superman. The realization of that, you know, he's the city's champion and just what he means to the city. And how that kind of scares Kara. Again, I think that's just a great character developing moment. Moving on to another part that also helps all of that along is the Trinity itself and how they interact with each other. And how they facilitate each other. Again, each one has their own strengths. And one thing this movie does greatly is it sort of shows each strength of each character. Sort of the planning and the strategy of Batman, the execution of Superman, sort of the strong will and sort of the hope within Wonder Woman. Again, each of these characters help facilitate. And again, it's not just Kara that's dealing with things, it's Superman. And again, Batman's cautious attitude and Wonder Woman's sort of strict attitude trying to help Clark understand that, you know, he's being, you know, too kind and he's letting his guard down. And at the same time, even though he does make those mistakes, being there for him and helping him by going to Apocalypse and helping getting Kara back. They're cautious about Kara, but at the same time, they're, you know, especially with Wonder Woman, they're very warm and welcoming. You know, because again, the mistake that Clark makes with Kara is, again, trying to force too much onto her. And again, it's only by helping Kara realize her own strength and being cautious with her that she's able to realize what she wants to do with her life. And again, you just see how well this Trinity works together and how they're able to help each other when just one has a problem. And I like that about the movie. I like how the movie shows that. No one seems stronger than any one character. And I think that's perfect for the Trinity. You know, there's, again, it shows a great balance among these three characters of the DC Trinity. And like I said, I love that about the story. Another part we can talk about with Superman is Superman grapples a lot with his... I kind of put it his own mortality. And I say that only because, you know, again, he's grappling with the fact that, you know, here's this person who may very well be not only another survivor from Krypton, but another member of his family. And he so wants to believe in the fact there's somebody else from Krypton and maybe a member of his family, his original family, surviving. Again, it's not that he doesn't love Ma and Pa and that stuff, but again, wanting to... When you're the last of a kind, you know, you're very lonely. And again, that loneliness affecting him, making him bring down his guard, making him make bad decisions and being a lot more forceful than he usually is. The way you see Superman sort of grappling with where he stands in all of this and everything, I think the movie does it very well. And again, that goes to characterization, it goes to Tim Daly's acting. They do a wonderful job portraying sort of how Superman is grappling with this situation. Because again, Superman wants to be Superman, at the same point in time, hoping and praying that this is not a fake and that this is real. And wanting to do everything for Kara just because, you know, not only is she probably another survivor of Krypton, but a member of her family. Everything tells him that it's true and he wants so bad to believe it that it allows him to put him into a situation where Darkseid is able to use his forcefulness to get a hold of Kara. And I love how the movie shows that. Final part we're going to talk about with story, really has no story about it, and it's the fights. And I love the fight scenes in this movie. They are the epitome of win. Every fight scene is awesome. And for that matter, sort of the action scene, you know, that opening chase is really well done. It has a very good flow to it. I guess the first fight scene really would be, Well, actually, technically, when I think about it, the first fight scene is that first scene with Treasure fighting the Furies and being killed by the Furies, which I thought was done very well. Again, that was also done in the comics. But then you had sort of the ambush by Wonder Woman Housebringer on Superman and Kara. Again, that was done well and to an extent done the way it was done in the comic books. I really almost shot for shot. But really, the first big fight was that Doomsday fight, where it was the Doomsday sort of army versus the Amazons, Wonder Woman, Superman, and Batman. And that fight is just, I mean, first off, Batman with a battle axe. If that doesn't get you excited, nothing will. But again, all the characters act the way they should act, you know, just great flow in the battle. It just feels like this just great battle. And the culmination of the fight where Superman just has Wonder Woman call the Amazon back, flies up, and just says, "This ends now." And anybody who thinks Superman's a Boy Scout, watch that scene. If that doesn't tell you he's no Boy Scout, nothing will. I mean, he just lets loose. I mean, remind me not to piss Superman off. Because not only will he throw me into the sun, he'll fry my ass as well. Before he does it. But yeah, just a wonderful, you know, great flow to that fight. And then you have the numerous fight scenes on Apocalypse. The Superman Kara one was, it had a very decent flow to it. But again, really the fight that just shone at that point was the Big Barda Wonder Woman versus the Furies fight. I don't know why I was calling the Furies the Furies. Well, it's going to lead to a lot of questions, but that's here nor there. But again, against the Furies, and just, oh my god, the flow and the natural movement of the fight. Just, again, the epitome of win. One of my favorite shots is where Barda, you know, is facing Stampa. And she locks her legs around the neck, heads, and then performs a Hurricane Rana, gets up, gets her weapon, is then faces off against Guillotina, is able to parry. And so, you know, the flow, the natural flow is perfect. This is a great example to show people of how a fight scene should be done. Even though at a point to where the Furies are able to subdue Big Barda, never at any point in this fight does Big Barda or Wonder Woman look weak. And it's just an awesome fight. And then, of course, you have the final fight with, you know, Darkseid versus Clark and Kara. And again, one of the things I love about this fight is it shows sort of the different fighting styles between Kara and Clark. Kara, being that she's been trained by Diana and the Amazons, you know, she's more of a sort of, trying to think of the word, a hand-to-hand type of fighting style. Whereas Clark tends to use more of his powers. She's, you know, Kara uses her speed to get advantage and use her ability to fight hand-to-hand combat to fight Darkseid, and she just kicks ass in that scene. And then with Clark, it's a matter of him using his powers, again, going underground, tunneling underground, making a big piece of earth, you know, causing a tornado where he's doing constant punches on him. And that's a great look of Darkseid, by the way. When he finally grabs him after Superman's been throwing all those punches and hitting him with heat vision, and the way his face looks, it's just awesome. It makes you feel sort of the physicalness of this fight. And again, I also want to point something out. Again, how these movies are PG-13. There's a couple of cuss words used, but more importantly, at the end of this fight scene, Kara and Clark look like they've been in a battle. You know, unlike Superman Doomsday at the end of the Doomsday Superman fight where there's just a little bit of blood and it really didn't look like Superman had been in a battle. Here, it looks like he'd been through hell. In fact, in all the fights that Superman was in, it looked like he'd been through hell. And I like that about it. And again, it's just bringing you into the physicalness, sort of the drama and the tension of the fight. Oh man, I love it. Overall, when it comes to this movie, this, I think, is at the very least in the top three best direct-to-DVD movies that DC has done as far as their animated line. For me, it is my best. I've watched this movie numerous times, as I've read the comic book numerous times. I never get tired of reading the comic book that this is based off of, and I never get tired of watching this movie. The voice acting is superb, with maybe a mistake or two here or there. The voice, you know, the animation is wonderful. The music is stupendous, and the story is incredible. I cannot speak highly of this movie. It's probably one of the best DC animated movies that will ever be done. So overall, a 5 out of 5 out of me. I really highly suggest everybody go check this movie out. That's it for my review of Superman Batman Apocalypse. If you have any comments you want to leave about, you know, my review or anything for that matter, you know, remember there are numerous ways you can do it. You can leave a comment on our Facebook page that you can find by searching out Absolution Network on Facebook. You can, of course, leave comments on the webpage, which you can do by going to our webpage, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. And, of course, you can always email us at absolution132@yahoo.com. That is absolution132@yahoo.com. And, of course, while you're at it, remember to check out all our other podcasting sites, which includes Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast site, where it's featured again, our Tokyo SOS Godzilla podcast. You can find that at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And, of course, our wonderful comic book crazy podcasting site, which is just in full swing and has tons of stuff, interviews and stuff coming out, features podcasts like Hexcast, a podcast about Jim Ballant's Tarot, Witch of the Black Rose, the comic book pitch, and, of course, comic book crazy. You can find that site at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, always remember to check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site. People like Michael Bailey's Views from the Lumbox and From Crisis to Crisis, which he does with Jeffrey Taylor. Brad Douglas's Spider-Man's Crawl Space. The Steven Syker's Major Spoilers podcast. Scott Gardner's 2-2 Freaks. Of course, my good friend Zach Joyner's Clone Saga Chronicles. Donovan's Dragon Ball Z Next Dimensions podcast. Just, you know, to name a few. They're all in the sidebar. Check them out. And, of course, all other 132 production sites like my aforementioned other podcasting sites, and of course, random Redbox reviews. So that's it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Next week, well, it technically isn't superhero month. Next week, a very big movie comes out. So I figured, in preparation, since it finally came out on Netflix as well, I thought I'd review a movie about Marvel's Avengers. So, yeah, I'm going to be covering the Avengers anime movie that came out mid-2000. So that is next week. So until next time, my Toonami generation, stay gold.
A cursed samurai. You have succeeded again in eluding my effort. But I am not worried. For one day you will fail.
By DJ Clark Nova. Don't sleep on it.